Chapter 53. Naomi. The Blue Frog was closed for renovations. So after the meetings were over, she drove the cart to a pub 2 levels higher and a little to spinward. The sign beside the door was cheap steel set into the wall with the words Cooperative 14 hand-welded into it. Naomi didn't know if the name had a history behind it, or if that was just the new style in naming clubs. On the other side of the door, the decor took on a much less industrial feel. The tables glowed in bright primary colors, and the walls were covered in strands of woven wire, looped and tied to look like old pictures of waterfalls. A low stage with a karaoke setup hummed and danced with itself, waiting for someone to break the ice. There was room for as many as 100 people in the space, and, counting herself and Jim, there were probably fewer than 20. But it was also off-hours, so that made it hard to judge. The crew were already there, and to judge from the empty bottles the waiter was clearing away had been there for some time. As they walked across to them, Jim relaxed. The four of them gave a little cheer and made space for 2 new chairs at the table. "What happened?" Bobby said. "You were supposed to be here hours ago." "Avasarala jumped me," Jim said, and Amos's empty, amiable smile got a degree wider. Jim laughed and shook his head. "No, I mean she tried to get me named as the head of the Spacing Guild." "You know that name's not going to stick, right?" Alex said. "Wait, she did what?" Bobby said. Jim held out his hands, a gesture of helplessness. "She gave out the proposal, and I gave my little speech about it, and then boom. Right at the front, she said I should be the one to help put it together. First union president. It probably took the first 2 hours just convincing her I wouldn't do it."
"Why didn't you take the position?" Clarissa asked. She seemed genuinely confused.
"Because then I'd have to do it," James said, waving to call the waiter back. "Makes sense she'd want someone she could control calling the shots, though," Alex said.
"Avasarala doesn't think she can control Holden," Bobby said. "But she also doesn't think anyone else can. She might just want someone from Earth in charge, at least as a figurehead. Makes the Union feel like it's in her circle of influence. Fred Johnson was OPA to the marrow, but he was from Earth. He never totally got away from that."
The waiter trotted over and took Jim's order. Naomi leaned in around him so she could see Bobby as she spoke.
"That was our point," she said. "If it's going to work, the belt needs to know it's their own, and not another set of scraps that the inners are tossing out."
The waiter reached out, his fingers stopping just short of touching her shoulder.
"Whatever your best stout is," she said,
and he vanished with a nod. She turned back. "Anyway, we threw Michio Pa under the bus."
"She's perfect," Holden said. "She knows all the players in the belt. She's not afraid to work with Earth and Mars. She's literally the former commander of Medina Station.
Granted, back before it was a station, but she's got a real familiarity with the ship. And look what she's been doing since she broke with Inaros. Coordination and distribution, exactly the job we're looking at."
"Well," Alex said, "except with less piracy this time. I mean, assuming."
"Did she take the job?" Bobby asked.
"She's coming around," Naomi said. "It was a long meeting."
"What about us?" Clarissa asked. Her voice had dread in it, a hollowness. "What do we do now?"
"We join the union," Jim said. "I mean, we'll need to vote on it here in the family, but it seems weird to push for a new architecture for the colonies and then not be a part of it. And there'll be a lot of work for a good ship. We have a good ship."
Clarissa's gaze flickered up to Naomi, then, with an almost invisible smile, away. Jim hadn't understood what she'd really been asking. "Now that the war's over, do I still have a place here?" And he didn't know that he'd answered yes. He had a genius for assuming things that let Clarissa trust him. Naomi handed the girl a napkin.
so she wouldn't have to dab her eyes with a cuff.
"Seems to me," Alex said, "we should look at escorting colony ships and making sure the ore or whatever the colony has to trade gets where it's going."
"Lot of trade in-system, too," Amos said. "Don't have to go out past the gates."
"Yeah," Alex agreed, "but there's more planets out there than I'm going to be able to see in my lifetime. I'd like to get to a few of them."
The waiter returned with Jim's gin and tonic and her own stout. When she tried to pay, the transaction was already zeroed out. The waiter smiled at her, shook his head, and said,
"On the house."
Naomi nodded her thanks. Jim was already drinking. Bobby was the only one who seemed quiet, her hand wrapped around a glass. Alex and Amos told Clarissa stories about New Terra and going through to the New Worlds. Jim drank and chimed in on occasion, the political meetings starting to fade and his shoulders slipping a little lower as he relaxed. But Bobby kept her own counsel until Naomi finished her second drink, took the Martian's hand, and tugged her away.
"Are you all right?"
Naomi asked.
"Yes," Bobby said in a voice that meant no.
"It's just, this is really the end of the terraforming project, isn't it? I mean, I knew that, but I don't know. Trying to get us all to here helped distract me. But this agreement they're hammering out, it's the shape things are going to have from now on."
"Yeah,"
Naomi said, "and it's going to be different. All my life, changing Mars, making it a viable ecosystem. It's just always been a thing. Hearing about rules and laws and systems for how that's never coming back, I don't know. It's kind of hitting me that it's really gone."
"Probably, yeah,"
Naomi said. But Bobby went on as if she hadn't heard her, as if she was saying something out loud for the first time, discovering her thoughts by hearing them expressed in her own voice. "Because Inaros and all the Free Navy people, they weren't fighting for Belter rights or political recognition. They were fighting to have the past back, to have things be what they've always been. Sure, with them on top, but Earth's not going to be humanity's home anymore. Mars isn't going to be Mars, not like I knew it. Belters aren't even going to be Belters now. They're going to be, what, shipping magnates? I don't even know."
"No one does," Naomi said, leading Bobby forward.
The big Martian didn't seem aware that they were walking.
"But we're going to find out.
I don't know who I am in that world."
"I don't either. None of us does. But I know that I have my ship and my little family with it."
"Yeah, that sounds like a plan."
"Good," Naomi said, and put a microphone in Bobby's hand. "Let's pick a song."
The pub filled up more at shift change, but for once, no one seemed to take much notice of Jim or any of the rest of them. Even when Naomi got a standing ovation for what in retrospect must have been a deeply flawed version of Devi Anderson's Apart Together, nobody seemed to recognize the crew of the Rosinante as being anything but the people at table six. It felt good knowing that could still happen sometimes. By the end of the night, even Clarissa had a turn on stage. It turned out she had a good singing voice. And after she got down, a local boy with Loka Griga tattoos tried to hit on her until Bobby gently made it clear nothing was going to happen. They took the tube back to the dock, filling up almost half of a car just themselves. Still a little tipsy, still talking too loud, laughing at nothing really. Alex's Mariner Valley drawl got thicker and Bobby mimicked it, egging them on until they sounded like parodies of themselves. Jim, least involved with the hilarity and still somehow central to it, sat back against the rattling wall of the car, his hands behind his head and his eyes half closed. She didn't really understand what she and Jim and all the others were reacting to until they were at the ship. Seeing the Rocinante locked in the docking clamps was like falling into a familiar pair of arms. They were giddy because Jim was giddy. And Jim was giddy because, for once, he'd just avoided being responsible for the future of the whole human race. It seemed like a fair thing to celebrate. Back on board, the group moved together to the galley, not ready yet for the day to be over. Clarissa made herself some tea, but there wasn't any more alcohol. Just the six of them, lounging in a galley designed to serve many more. Alex, sitting with his back against one wall, told a story about when he'd been in training on Olympus Mons, and the mother of one of the other recruits had arrived to complain that the drill sergeant was being too rough on her son. That led into Bobby talking about a time when she and her squad had all gotten food poisoning at the same meal, but bullied each other into training the next day regardless, then spent the day puking into their helmets. They were all laughing together, sharing parts of the lives they'd had before they came here, before the Rocinante was their home. Eventually, without the flow of conversation abating, Alex made enough chicken with peanut sauce for everyone and passed bowls out while Clarissa told a surprisingly funny story about being in a prison writing workshop. Naomi ate the chicken with a fork, leaning against Jim as she did. The sauce wasn't like Belters made it, but it was good enough. She felt Jim getting near the end of his endurance. He didn't say anything, but she knew from the sound of his breath and the way he unconsciously tapped his leg like a child trying to stay awake. She felt the exhaustion herself. It had been a long day, and the stakes had been high. The pleasant buzz left over from the pub was starting to fade, and deep, muzzy tiredness was slipping into her joints. But she didn't want the moment to end, either. Any of the moments with these people in this place, even though, eventually, they had to. No, not even though. Because eventually they had to. Nothing lasted forever. Not peace. Not war. Nothing. She stood first, taking her bowl and Jim's and Bobby's since she was done with it, and feeding them into the recycler. She stretched, yawned, held her hand out to Jim. He took his cue. Alex, who was talking about a music performance he'd seen on Titan back when he'd still been in the service, nodded his goodnight. Naomi led Jim to the lift, then to their cabin, with the occasional sound of laughter filtering through to them, fainter the farther they went, but not absent. Not yet. Jim fell onto the crash couch like a marionette with his strings cut, threw one arm across his eyes, and groaned. In the light, he looked young again. The stubble on his neck and along the side of one cheek was thin and patchy, as if it were growing in for the first time. She could remember when the prospect of Jim and his body had been as powerful as a drug to her. Powerful enough that she'd been driven to take the risk of being with him. He hadn't known then how much of a leap it had been for her. He probably still didn't know now. Some things were secret, even after you told them. He moaned again, shifted his arm, looked up at her. His smile was equal parts exhaustion and delight. Exhaustion from what they'd been through, delight because it was done, and because they were both there. "Do you think Pa will take the job?" he asked. He sounded almost wistful. "Yes, eventually," Naomi said, and then a moment later, "How long have you been planning that?" "The idea of the union, or Pa in particular?" "Pa," Jim shrugged. "It was pretty clear early on that having an Earther be the head of it wasn't going to work. I thought Fred would be able to find someone. So I guess I started looking at her for it right around then. Consciously, anyway. She was kind of perfect, though. She broke with the Free Navy in order to help the Belt. No one else did that, or at least not as openly. And she won every fight she led her people into. I think the ones who need to take her seriously will. Naomi sat on the edge of the crash couch. It shifted with the change in the center of their combined weight, moving Jim a few centimeters closer to her. He stretched out an arm as invitation, and she settled back into it. Do you think she'll enjoy it?
I don't know. I'd hate it. But maybe she's different enough from me, she'll find something to redeem the process. The important thing is, I think she'll be good at it. Plays to her strengths. At least, I don't know anyone who's likely to do better.
I hope you're right, she said. You really think you couldn't have done it?
I was never an option. There's too much history. Maybe an Earther can do it in a generation or three when things have been different for a while.
Naomi laughed, moved her head to rest beside his. By then, something else will have happened.
Yeah, Holden said. That's true. But in the short term, I really do think she's the best one for the job.
I'm just glad she was here. My second choice for the job would have been you. She sat up, looking into his eyes to see whether he was joking. A long way away, Amos laughed just loud enough for the echoes to reach her. Jim's expression was somewhere between chagrin and amusement. God, he'd been serious.
You could have done it, Holden said. You're smart, you're a belter. Your opposition to the Free Navies is good or better than Pa's. You have a track record that Earth and Mars would have been comfortable with and enough connection to the belt to make you plausible to them.
You know I wouldn't have done it, right?
No,
Jim said. And there was something almost like sorrow in his voice.
I know you wouldn't have wanted to. I know you would have hated it.
But you would have, if you had to. If there wasn't someone else. Too many people would have needed you for you to turn them all away. She lay back down, considered the idea, and shuddered.
I know, right? Jim said. And how are you doing?
She took the hand of the arm she was lying across in hers, drew it gently around her like he was a blanket. He had asked her that every few days since the war ended. How was she doing? It sounded like an innocuous question, but it carried more than its own weight. She'd killed her old lover, her old friends. She wished with a longing as powerful as thirst that there had been a way to save her son. Jim wasn't asking if she was all right, so much as how bad was it. There was no good answer for that. I will carry this guilt and sadness for the rest of my life was just as true as I lost my son years ago. Her comfort was that she was still alive, that Jim was, and Amos and Alex, Bobby and Clarissa. She was as much a monster as Clarissa or Amos had ever been. She was someone who'd found a way to save her little chosen family when everything seemed lost. The two didn't balance, but they existed together. Pain and relief, sorrow and contentment. The evil and the redeeming could sit together in her heart, live together, and neither one take the edge off the other. And Jim knew that. He didn't ask because he needed an answer. He asked because he needed her to know the answer mattered to him. That was all. I'm all right, she said, the way she always did. Jim reached out his other hand and dimmed the lights. Naomi closed her eyes. They felt very comfortable that way. She could hear from Jim's breath that he wasn't asleep, that he was thinking about something. She kept herself awake, just a little, waited for him. Little flickers of dream danced at the edge of her mind, and she lost track of her body every now and again. Do you think we should go out to the colonies? He said. It seems like maybe we ought to. I mean,
We've been to Illus. And if we can sort of blaze the trail, make it normal, maybe it'll be easier for Pa to get more belt ships to take the risk.
Maybe, she said.
Because the other thing we could do is stay here. There's just a lot of work that's going to need to happen here. Rebuilding, beefing up Medina for when Duarte comes back. Because, you know, whatever he's doing is going to be a problem eventually. I don't know where we should go next. Naomi nodded. Jim rolled in closer to her. The warmth of his body and the smell of his skin were consoling. Let's just stay here for a minute, she said.